Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me is my colleague, Peter Flaherty. And we are here talking about college baseball coming out of what was a very stacked weekend three and looking ahead to weekend four, which is highlighted by the start of conference play. So we're in an exciting time of the college baseball calendar as the actual calendar has flipped to March. We've got some conference baseball to be played this weekend. There was actually a couple, like the Mountain West started last week, but we've got a lot more conference baseball to look forward to this weekend. We have some tournament action to wrap up and rivalry action, I should say, as well, to wrap up from last weekend, notably the Astros Foundation Classic at Minute Maid Park and Clemson and South Carolina's rivalry series. So a lot to get to, a very exciting weekend to come, Peter. We're in a great spot in this calendar.
Yeah, the season, dare I say, is flying by. It's hard to believe that it's already March 6th as we record this and the start of conference play. We had last weekend circled since really the release of everyone's schedule as kind of the first really loaded weekend. And I'd say more or less, and for maybe different reasons than we'd initially thought, it lived up to the billing. There were a lot of excellent tournaments. A handful of teams had really, really strong showings, others not so much. And the waters are a little bit murky for some of these conferences, as we'll dive into it more as we head into conference play. But the start of conference play, I'm really excited for. Obviously, the big series is Wake and Duke, but there are some other intriguing ones out there that we'll dive into. So a very exciting, fun time overall.
Let's start back last weekend in Houston. The Astros Foundation Classic was highlighted by LSU going 3-0 and the new look LSU rotation looking incredible while they were doing it. The other big storyline of the weekend from that tournament was Texas's no good, very bad weekend. Let's start with the good though, Peter. And that was LSU. And we talked on the podcast last week. We weren't quite sure who was going to start on Friday night for LSU. I had an idea that it might be Luke Holman, but like that wasn't sourced. That was just me looking at how things might play out. And that's what happened. Luke Holman moved to Friday night for LSU, and he was outstanding in his Friday night debut for the Tigers. He struck out 12 batters in 5 2/3 against Texas. LSU kind of cruised to a win in that game. And then LSU slotted Gage Jump in on Saturday. He had started on Thursday the previous week in his LSU debut as a starter. He moves to Saturday. He threw 5 really good innings. He faced just one batter over the minimum. And then Thatcher Hurd, who had been the opening day starter, got pushed back to Sunday. And he threw 5 really strong innings himself. You can also throw Cade Anderson into the mix here, who has become the midweek starter. It seems like he started last week at Rice, and he threw 5 good innings there. And he'll start as we record this on Wednesday, he'll start tonight against Southeastern Louisiana. So I don't know how he'll have done there when by the time you guys get this in your ears. But the point is, LSU has found what it looks like it wants to be their quartet of starters. And it looks really good. It looked exceptional with Luke Holman on Friday night. And Gage Jump and Thatcher Hurd both followed and looked quite good themselves.
Yeah, this is the time of year where teams kind of start to come into form. They figure out what they want to do rotation-wise. They get their 9 more or less in the lineup that they're going to want to roll with as they head into conference play. And LSU looked really, really impressive. It started on Friday night with Luke Holman, as you mentioned, with the 5 2/3 shutout innings. He racked up 12 strikeouts. Like, he is a bona fide, looked the part on Friday night at least, of a bona fide Friday night ace in the SEC. I'm not here to say that he's going to go out and do what he did on Friday every single night he takes the mound, but the LSU, similar to last year when they would trot out Paul Skeens, maybe not this unbeatable, but they're going to be really, really tough to beat on Friday nights when they've got Luke Holman on the mound. And the lineup is really, really well-rounded. I think that they can beat you in so many ways. It obviously, Tommy White is the guy there, but there have been so many guys around him, and we can't say this at least quite yet about some of the other top teams in the country, namely Wake Forest, not to foreshadow down the road in the podcast, but there have been so many guys that have stepped up around Tommy White, both on this season as a whole, and then also on a game-to-game basis. There seems to be one guy that really comes through and wins them whatever game they're in. Like on Friday night, Jared Jones went 3-for-4 with a home run and two doubles and three RBIs. On Saturday against Louisiana Lafayette, Hayden Travinsky went 2-for-3 with three RBIs. And then on Sunday, they had a very balanced, well-rounded attack when they laced 19 hits. But like, we are starting to see how deep LSU is, and they look every bit as good or every bit as good as a national championship contender at this point probably does look. And in terms of teams in the country, like, it's them and Oregon State, Arkansas, and A&M for me is like kind of those, like, in terms of a power ranking, not necessarily in order of like the four kind of big dogs right now up at the top. And that rotation, like, I'd like to see this iteration be trotted out on an SEC weekend, just to kind of see how it all shuffles out. But Holman and Jump, that's a lethal 1-2 punch on Friday and Saturday. And then if it ends up being where Thatcher Hurd is best suited for Sundays, where he looked a lot better, granted it was against, people will maybe scoff at Texas State and be like, oh, it was only against Texas State. But Texas State, to their credit, is a really, really solid club. Like, they will contend this year in the Sun Belt. They can really swing it. They've got a handful of guys in that lineup that I really like, namely Ryan Farber and Chase Mora. But to see him only allow 2 earned, strikeout 5, be around the strike zone for the most part, I thought that was really encouraging. And then you mentioned you can kind of throw Kate Anderson into the mix as like that emergency guy where if it kind of keeps not working out with Thatcher Hurd, you can slide him in on Sundays. That's huge. And then the bullpen depth is, I also think, another strong point.
Yeah. I mean, the bullpen you mentioned there, like, Fidel Ulloa has really come on as, and looks like they
he's
haven't
a
need,
legit closer.
Yeah. They haven't needed like a closer that many times yet, but like, that's who it looks like it's gonna be. And man, like, I mean, he looks the part, and I don't just mean the mustache. Like, he's gonna be a real weapon for them at the back end. And Peter, like, that's a guy that came out of junior college. Like, we made a lot about Luke Holman and Gage Jump transferring to LSU in the off season, and you know, the portal guys are always gonna get the headlines. But Ulloa coming from JC has been, I mean, not as impactful because he's not a starter, but he is going to have serious, serious impact on that pitching staff this season.
Yeah, and it's kind of like we're beating a dead horse almost with this narrative, at least I am. But every team, it seems like, at least in recent memory that have hoisted the national championship trophy and have dogpiled, they've had these almost like unsung transfers. And Fidel Ulloa, at least early on, is that guy. It's a legit fastball slider combo, fastball up to 96 with a really sharp, lethal slider that's a true swing and miss pitch. Like, he's your guy in the back end. And like, as we're examining potential holes for, you know, LSU, it's hard at this point to find one. It was maybe a little easier early on in the season, but as they're starting to come into form, they look every part of a national title team again.
For them to have the depth both offensively and in the pitching staff, I mean, this is why coming into the season I said that LSU was, for me, the deepest team 1-35, 1-40, 1-27, like wherever you wanted to draw the line, they were the deepest team. And I think you're seeing that now. And I mean, we didn't even mention Javon Coleman as a potential starter. Like, if they needed it, Javon Coleman could be a nice Sunday starter. You know, so I'm not here to say that LSU has the very best rotation in the country or in the SEC or even in the SEC West. Arkansas may well hold that. And just the depth that they have, the number of options that they have, that is what has always stood out for me. And then you have a weekend like this where, you know, on a big, big stage, you know, really for the first time this year, because LSU's first two weekends were pretty nondescript home weekends against overmatched teams. They went out and they showed that, like, they're ready for their close up, and you know, that's what they did in Houston, and that is what impressed me the most.
Yeah, and like you said, performing under the brightest lights, and you kind of immediately get thrown into the fire. Where on Friday, I think that a lot of people's tone has changed on Texas since Friday, but coming into Friday, you kind of get a hot and hyped up Texas team that you soundly beat. So it's between them and Vanderbilt with whom I was most impressed, but I think it was an outstanding showing for LSU.
I'm going to walk all over that, what would have been a lovely transition there, to circle back to a thing that I was trying to find about Fidel Ulloa when we were talking about him. So it's a handlebar mustache. If you haven't seen it, folks, like, go find it. And Peter, he said that he never grew a mustache before. He got to Baton Rouge in the fall and grew that thing. I mean, come on.
Must be nice to be able to just like experiment with facial hair, like I'm sure everyone has, and be able to like, I can grow an 80 mustache. Like that only adds to the allure, and that has me more bought in on him.
All right, so let's get to Vanderbilt. The doors, last week we spent a lot of time on Vanderbilt on this podcast, and we were not super excited about what we had seen to that point. And then Vanderbilt goes out and they go 5-0 last week. They beat Indiana State really badly on Tuesday night. We talked a little bit about that a week ago. They added another midweek win, and then they go and they sweep through the tournament in Houston. And you know, it was a week that they needed. They needed that 5-0 week. I think you can still, there have been concerns about the way Vanderbilt has pitched, and I think some of that, frankly, is because it's Vanderbilt. And we associate Vanderbilt with pitching, but also because that was supposed to be the strength of this team. And, you know, in some ways you can look at that and say it's justified. Devin Fittrell got lit on Sunday and Vanderbilt had to come back and pick him up. And they did it. Carter Holton has an ERA of nearly 7 right now. It's not illustrative of the way he's pitched, but if you just look at it and you're like, what are those two dudes, like two of the most experienced starters in the SEC, doing like to start the year? And it hasn't looked great. And that's put additional pressure on the Vanderbilt bullpen. But the Vanderbilt bullpen has really answered the bell, and they've got some freshmen that have done it. And so I feel like, I mean, maybe this is just like the optimistic spin on it, but like, Holton and Fittrell are not going to be like this all season long. Like, they have lengthy track records of success in college baseball and in the SEC. They'll figure it out. And then if that bullpen with those freshmen that they're relying on right now, if those guys are able to continue this or something close to what they've done to this point, like, now you're looking at a deeper pitching staff than even I realized coming in.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think starting with the pitching staff, like that rotation, again, when we talk about teams coming into form, I think it's going to look really, really good, obviously, with Holton and Fittrell. And then you throw in someone like JD Thompson into the mix, or if you end up going with Bryce Cunningham, who has been excellent to this point, that's a really solid, again, a really solid three guy rotation and a really solid quartet when you add Thompson into the mix. And then I think the X factor, like you said, Ethan McElvain more or less has lived up to the immense hype that he had coming onto campus, and then also that he built up during the fall. And then I think it's been most encouraging to see the resurgence, if you can call it that, of Andrew Dukanich, who might have the best stuff, or at least some of the best stuff, on the staff. He's looked really good at times this year, and he's become a more and more viable option. Grayson Carter has still kind of been plagued with control issues, but he also, I mean, he throws absolute noise and he's looked really good. And I think someone like a Sawyer Hawks, you see down, if you're looking at the stats of the PDF stats, he's probably down at the bottom of the pitching staff, but he is another guy who, similar to Holton, maybe not like Holton this year, where he has actually pitched really well and has gotten felt the effects of baseball being a weird sport to kind of inflate his numbers. But Sawyer Hawks is a really, really good arm as well. And I think if he's able to figure it out and get back to where he was at Air Force, I mean, that is a, similar to Uloa at LSU, that is a legit weapon in the back end. But kind of circling back to this week, they really needed it. We talked about it, like you said last week on the podcast, as we just wanted Vanderbilt to, in essence, to like win the week and notch the equivalent of a series win over the weekend. And if they were even to go like 3-2 would have been a lot less encouraging, but like 4-1 would have been just fine. And I think also the way in which they did it was really, really impressive. Like, it was the cherry on top was obviously that comeback win over Texas. And then I think it was perfectly bookended with a 20-4 drubbing of a really good, at least a very solid Indiana State team who last year hosted a regional, went to a super regional and all that. And the offense has just been super, super impressive. Like, pitching is usually the story with Vanderbilt, but for me, it's been the offense, particularly Cam Kojal, who really stepped up this past week. I think he had 14 hits. Alan Espinal has looked really good. RJ Austin has come out of the gate hot. And then veteran guys like Troy Leniv, they're so invaluable to the team. And he came up with two huge hits against Texas. And then Jaden Davis, a Samford transfer. Like, you can kind of go on and on. And I think that, like, they're going to be, like, their win against Louisiana wasn't convincing. Their win against Houston wasn't super convincing. They were down 11-3 against Texas, but they're going to be a team this season in SEC play and in the postseason. It's going to be really, really hard to get 27 outs on these guys and come away with a win. Like, they are a really gritty team. They're not out of any game. They believe they're in every single game. And they have guys up and down the lineup, like all nine of these guys, and just looking at their lineup against Texas that they trotted out in over the weekend, every single one of these guys can come through with a big swing, a game-changing type swing. And I think that's what makes this team so dangerous, especially once they figure out the kinks on the pitching staff. Like, you talk about at least depth-wise and who's the deepest team. I think Vanderbilt is right there. I am curious to see, like, if the pitching staff is able to continue to improve, or if it, like, unfortunately plateaus and this is just kind of who it is as a staff. I don't think it is, but that offense I'm really, really excited about.
The way that Vanderbilt has thrown freshmen into the mix right away, I think, is encouraging if you're looking for long-term improvement, because those are players that, I mean, yeah, you have to live with some growing pains, and yeah, there will be some ups and downs as they get used to life in college baseball, but you can also generally expect some freshmen to make improvements as the season continues, because they are so much younger and they have to find new ways to have success. So I think that's a thing you can look at moving forward with Vanderbilt. I do think there's more ceiling to come. Like, they are not at their ceiling, and they shouldn't be. It's, you know, it's March 6th. None of these teams should be, but I do think that you're going to see some continued growth with them. And then I guess the other thing with Vanderbilt to mention here is that Tim Corbin this week on Tuesday with Vanderbilt's midweek win won his 1,000th game with the Commodores, which is it's a lot of wins. that's a lot of wins and not a terribly long amount of time there for Tim Corbin. So congratulations to him on that milestone.
Yeah, congratulations to Coach Corbin. He's one of the game's best, and looking forward to hopefully a lot more.
All right, so let's talk about Texas. Last week I said a lot of things about Texas, and they went 0-3. It wasn't good. And they have since added another loss to A&M on Tuesday at home, and that also wasn't great. And facing them this weekend is a trip to Texas Tech to open Big 12 play, and Lubbock is a bit of a house of horrors for Texas baseball in recent seasons. So this is, they're in it right now. And, you know, there are a lot of, you can really get down on Texas right now if you want to. They did not pitch well at all this weekend. The bullpen coughed up some leads. The starters did not pitch as well as they had been. Like LeBaron Johnson got knocked out in the fourth by LSU. It just hasn't gone well. Like basically nothing went right for Texas this week. I think like Porter Brown like has started coming out of his early season slow start, but otherwise like nothing went right for Texas this week. And I guess maybe this is me like being way too optimistic about Texas. Like you could make that argument. On the other hand, this is also just kind of what Texas has done under David Pierce. If you look, it's insane how bad they've been in tournaments hosted by either the Rangers or the Astros. Like they play in one of those two tournaments every spring under, you know, for the last 5 years. Only one time have they come out of there with a winning weekend, and that was in 2022. But last year in Arlington, they went 0-3. They still went to Super Regionals. In 2021, they went 0-3. They went to Omaha. In 2020, they went 1-2, and we don't know where they would have gone, but they were 14-3 when the season got canceled. So what David Pierce is really, really good at is making in-season adjustments and getting things corrected. He obviously has his work cut out for him with this team in terms of doing that, just because he's done it very successfully in each of the last three seasons doesn't mean that they'll be able to do it this year. But I'm not like, you can get as down as you want on Texas right now, but like, I'm not going to be there with you. Like I am going to believe, and you know, this weekend also might not be very good, but like that's, well, and if that happens, like, they're not going to be in the top 25 come next week, but I'm still not going to worry that much. Like I just believe in the talent and I believe in the coaching staff to find the right buttons to push as bad as it looks right now. And it looks bad.
Yeah. And like you said, I think it's very fair for people to be super reactionary about the last four games and kind of be as down on them as you want. I'm probably somewhere in the middle, which is like a cop-out answer between being not bought out on them, but rather down. And then also,
I mean,
like
it's the right place to be though. I'm too high right now. Like I will acknowledge that I am believing too much probably. And the people that are like, oh, the season is over. Like, you know, that's obviously over an overreaction. Like there is plenty of space in the middle, and inhabiting it is probably the right place to be.
And I think in looking at the personnel that they have, like the lineup, I'm very encouraged about. I worry very little that they're going to be able to hit. Like we saw it this weekend, they hit well for the most part. Like LSU, obviously, Luke Holman shut them down, but they hit well later in the game. They laced 10 hits against Texas State, I think it was, 15 against Vanderbilt. And so it wasn't all – like I'm just very worried – about where the 27 outs are going to come from, because you have LeBaron Johnson that's headlining that rotation. Like there's no doubt. I know he wasn't at his best on Friday, and it was against LSU, who is one of, if not the best team in the country at this point. But like, I really question like behind him. I know like in just looking at the box score and the stats that he's done, that he's compiled to this point, Cody Howard has been solid. He really, really struggled against Vanderbilt. And then in looking elsewhere, like Tanner Witt, I know has been a nice bounce back story, and he's gone through a lot of adversity, and even just getting back on the mound is, admirable in and of itself. I really don't know if that's a, like we saw it last night, like, I don't know if that's a viable guy to be trotting out. Like I think it's a midweek starter. That's fine. But like, against A&M, I thought he was just okay. And like his mistakes are, they're bad mistakes. Like Braden Montgomery, like the top spun homer he hit, that was a laser. That was a 90 mile an hour BP fat, like a hack attack fastball that he got. So like the stuff obviously has a long way to go. And then like at this point, the bullpen is the bullpen. Like, I don't know if there is one guy that they can feel really confident in going to, where it's like, okay, he's going to get me three outs. He's going to be able to get me six outs or string together three innings at a time. Like it is a huge, huge, huge question mark as to where the rest of the outs are going to come from. Again, like I was in, like I say something nice about Texas Challenge when like this weekend was really bad. I do like that lineup a lot. Like Porter Brown, I thought it was only a matter of time before he got going. I hope that it kind of carries over. Max Bellew looks like a nice piece. He had a solid weekend. And then Jared Thomas has been outstanding, and so has Peyton Powell. Jalen Flores, if this is who he is, one, it's going to help him immensely from a draft standpoint. Like that is immediately like a legit draft guy. And then also it's going to help Texas immensely. Will Gasparino has come out of the gate swinging literally. And then Kimball Schessler has been a nice little supplemental piece. So I think that they're going to hit just fine. I just don't know if they're going to be able to hit enough to keep them in games, like especially where this weekend at Tech has all the makings of like three potential shootouts, like Big 12 football type games. Like I just really worry, like if it gets into a bullpen game, granted Tech doesn't have the best bullpen depth themselves, but if it gets into kind of a bullpen versus bullpen, who has the ball, who hits last type of game, like I don't think that at this point it bodes very well for Texas. But I will say this, after kind of railing them, one, I think that they can win this weekend. If they win this, if they notch a series win in Lubbock, that's huge, because I think that they have a very favorable stretch coming up. They host Washington, they host Baylor, they go to Kansas State. That's an interesting series, but that's at the end of March. So if they can win this weekend, they have two very winnable series on the horizon with a midweek against Incarnate Word and a midweek series against Air Force. Air Force always kind of gives them a challenge, and Air Force is a solid team, but like they have a chance here to kind of quickly right the ship and get the train back on the tracks and build some much needed momentum as they kind of get into the tougher slate of the Big 12. And even after the K-State series, like,
I'll be perfectly honest, I don't care like what happens this weekend, because just get through this weekend and things get so much easier and you'll have time to work it out. Like K-State, as you are right to point out, at the end of March as being tricky, but then it's BYU, and you know, we still don't have a good feel for what the newcomers are going to be like in the Big 12, but BYU is picked to finish last by the coaches, and I don't think if you redid that vote today, it would be any different. At Houston is tricky, potentially. Again, a newcomer, though. And then you get into it with TCU and Oklahoma State. But, like, that's a full month away. Like, you couldn't ask for a better time to figure it out. Now, the challenge is going to be if things go poorly again this weekend. And, I mean, let's say they go as bad as they can, and all of a sudden you're staring at a 7-game losing streak. Like, now it's about, like, do you have the mental toughness to pull out of that? And that's what a lot of this is going to be about. But like you said, Peter, I mean, they could go win this weekend, and at that point, like, they're in a great position.
Yeah, and they could really, like, exactly, like, they could win the series this weekend, which would be huge for a lot of reasons, and they could really get rolling. But what happens this weekend, it matters, like you said. But if they go out and lose a series, kind of like how South Carolina did this past weekend to Clemson, it's a little bit of a deep pull and a stretch of a parallel to draw. But if they, it's hard to look good losing. Like, no coach will say that they like are happy with a lot. But like, if they look very competitive, they throw the ball a little bit better, and they just go out and lose two or three really good baseball games, like, I mean, it happens. Like, I don't think there's any reason to get more down on them. But if they go down there and it last weekend and yesterday being Tuesday's loss against A&M, if it looks to have kind of carried over, then I'll be worried, because at that point, like, things can kind of get out of hand fast, both in a locker room and then on the field. Like, that's when I'd be a little concerned if they go out and get handily beat by Texas Tech. And Texas Tech is a good team, but at this point, it's not a team that Texas should be getting like dominated and like throttled by it in early March.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know that much about Texas Tech. They have a nice record and they have some really nice stats, but they've also sat at home the last two weekends and haven't really done much of anything since they left Arlington. So we're assuming a lot about Tech. And we'll find out more about Tech this weekend. That's one of the reasons to love conference play beginning, is because we finally have to, like, we have to see teams of similar caliber playing against each other. And this is a big series for both of these teams because, I mean, like, from the flip side, you know, if you're Tech and you take it on the chin this weekend against a team that everyone is, like, super down on right now, and Texas is supposed to be reeling, like, you know, if they do that to you, then all of a sudden your fans are going to be saying, like, what's wrong with you guys? Like, you just lost at home to that team. Like, and there's a lot, like, this weekend in Lubbock is going to be a lot, I think, because let's just set aside the way, like, the on-field stuff. Texas is leaving the Big 12 after the season. I don't know if you guys have heard that. That's a premium scoop right there. But Texas is leaving the Big 12. And Texas and Texas Tech at a athletic department level, I don't know if it goes above them to university, like, chancellor level or whatever, but, like, at least in an athletic department level, they do not like each other one bit. And I have not seen, like, what Tim Tadlock or David Pierce have, I don't know if they've been asked about this or not, but I find it hard to believe that this series is going to continue after this year. Like, this is quite probably the last time in a really long time that Texas is going to go to Lubbock for a weekend series. Maybe they'll be able to find some way to continue it as a midweek, though frankly I doubt it. Although Texas and Texas A&M continued to play they kept that rivalry alive as a midweek game at a time when the rest of the athletic department was really struggling to figure out how to continue playing each other. So maybe they can work something out on the baseball field, but I doubt it. Like, this really might be it. And it's going to be it as a weekend series. I feel very confident. And you better believe the people in Lubbock are going to be up for this, because they're mad at, like, the entire situation. So it's going to be a whole big thing. And then you add on, like, everything that Texas is going through and the urgency behind this series. Like, I'm excited for this weekend. And I really don't know what to expect out of the series at all.
Yeah, it's one to look forward to for a lot of reasons and a lot of different reasons. Like you said, the environment will be top notch. It's a great rivalry. The fan bases, especially the Tech fans at home, it will be nuts. And you add in the little wrinkle that this is kind of the last hurrah. Like, you, excuse me, like, you better believe that each team is going to be really, really wanting to have this one. And then circling all the way back to Texas Tech, not to dive too deep into the Red Raiders, but like you said, if they lose this series to Texas, one, it's tough because it's a Texas team that was spiraling. It's a rivalry series. And then you start to look at them in kind of the second week of March, and it's like, well, you know, who have you beaten? Like, they have a nice win over Oregon and Arlington. That weekend as a whole was I guess okay. They won.
They go 2-1.
It was an elongated weekend, but yeah. At this point, it's like a win over Oregon, and then they beat up on some really, really lesser opponents. So I think it's big for them too, and would be validating, at least, like, for me and for us. We have Tech ranked pretty high, so I think that this will, at least early on, kind of show us how for real this team is.
Yeah, Tech has edged its way up to 14. You know, given what Peter just said about the schedule, is a little, you know, like, I think Peter and I both would like to see that actually validated on the field. And this weekend is an opportunity to do that. We'll go slightly out of order here since we already dived into Texas and Texas Tech. Let's just take a quick look at the rest of the Big 12 as conference play begins. The other big series, interesting series this weekend for me is TCU going to Kansas. TCU still undefeated at 13-0. Kansas 7-4. If you believe in the Jayhawks, it's potentially a tricky weekend for the Frogs. It is minimally the first time the Frogs are going to be on the road. They played in Arlington last weekend, but that's a sleep in your own bed, neutral site kind of scenario. So this is different. And then the other one that I'm intrigued by is UCF, 8-1 UCF, kind of quietly, goes to Oklahoma, which has been very mixed this season and is coming off of a rough weekend in Vegas. couple interesting series around the Big 12 in addition to the headliner.
Yeah, the one I'm looking forward to most is probably UCF and Oklahoma. Oklahoma, at least early on in the season, I don't know if they are, well, they're not right now for me. They were kind of a very deep, like, super regional sleeper, potentially, like, get hot, make a run of the College World Series type of sleeper. They still could be that team. Like, that's very stupid to say they're not based off 11 games. I'm just not as bullish on them. But I am really excited to see how UCF looks at Oklahoma, because again, I think that's a little bit of a how for real are you to an extent type series. And if they can go to Norman and notch a series win, I think that'd be very impressive, because again, in looking at their body of work, really it's spotless other than a 2-run loss to South Florida. And they have a nice midweek win over Miami, which I know for them felt really, really good. But I think it's a little bit of a dress rehearsal for this weekend, and it stinks because it's a midweek game. Like, you can't really take anything. You have to take it with a major grain of salt, regardless of what happens, I think, in a midweek. They do play at Florida tonight, another in-state rival, which they're going to be super, super up for that game. And if they win that one, that I think that UCF becomes all that more interesting. But even if they lose kind of handily, I'm not going to change my tune on the Knights for a midweek loss at Florida. But my rambling cut short, I'm very much looking forward to how they look this weekend against Oklahoma, and I think a series win goes a long way for them.
Yeah, big week for the Knights, coming off of a nice series win against a rival in South Florida. It was a really hard fought. Those games were all close. So we'll see where where UCF goes in their first Big 12 season, but it's not an easy start having to go to Norman this weekend. All right, let's take a break here, and then we'll come back. We'll wrap up. We haven't gotten to South Carolina Clemson yet. Want to touch on them, and then we'll get into the start of ACC play this weekend, which is highlighted, of course, by Duke going to Wake Forest. So a lot to cover still here on the Baseball America College Podcast, and we'll be right back.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualification and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, Peter, the rivalry series, the biggest one of last weekend, there were several, but the biggest one was Clemson and South Carolina. And unfortunately, rain cost us Friday night's game. They will make it up because that series travels across the state. They couldn't do a doubleheader. Like, that would then mean South Carolina had lost its home game against Clemson, and so they will make that up. It sounds like probably sometime in April they will play a midweek against each other. So unfortunate that the series was shortened by a day, but we did get two absolutely thrilling games out of it. Both Clemson wins, both by 5-4 scores. They got it done in extra innings on Saturday, and then they completed the abbreviated sweep with a 5-4 win at home on Sunday. And you can say a lot of nice things about Clemson coming out of this weekend, but I thought the way that they pitched against a very good South Carolina offense was most impressive. However, I have learned from being on Twitter that maybe South Carolina fans are panicking a bit about their offense, which I think is a little ridiculous. I understand where it's coming from, but I am going to read more into what Clemson did on the mound this weekend than what South Carolina did at the plate.
Yeah, I think the story of this weekend is more just like how good Clemson is, as opposed to, like, at least in South Carolina's fans' minds, like how like thin the Gamecocks might be. Or I really don't think it's an indictment at all against South Carolina. I just came away more impressed with Clemson, especially after the previous weekend series against Kennesaw State that could have really gone awry if it weren't for that Saturday comeback win. Like you said, the pitching was the story. Tristan Smith, especially, like, he looks to be a legit guy for them. And I know that last year he showed flashes as a freshman, but he looks excellent in the early going. At least he's got an explosive fastball, a budding breaking ball. He struck out 9 across 5 innings. And the biggest thing for him to this point in his career, and even on the summer, this past summer on the Cape, was the command and control. It would be a little bit of a bugaboo at times for him. Still has reared its head a little bit this season, but it's gotten a heck of a lot better. And if he can go out and do what he did against Clemson on, I think it was Saturday, because that first game got banged.
Yeah, Saturday.
If he can go out and do what he did, like, that is, I mean, this Clemson team, again, becomes a lot better. And you start to talk about a 1-2 punch with him and Austin Gordon. Aiden Nock has looked really good as a freshman Sunday guy. Like, I think that he screams future Friday guy for him. And the lineup itself, again, you talk about balance and how teams can beat you. They, like, that lineup, I came away very, very impressed with. Like, and this is without Will Taylor really doing much, and even he hasn't really even hit his stride yet. I know he hit a home run in Sunday's game that ended up being a decisive home run, but again, he's yet to get going. Cam Cannarella, it starts with him at the top. He had a key 2-run double on Saturday that got the scoring started. But outside of those two guys, Blake Wright has been solid to this point. Richmond transfer Alden Mathis has been really, really good. Georgetown transfer Andrew Chufo came up with a huge swing on Saturday's game, the walk-off home run in the 12th. He's been excellent. Nolan Naraki, he didn't play much. He didn't play at all, actually, last year as a freshman. He had a nice summer in the NACBL. He's a toolsy player. He's off to a good start. Jacob Hinderleiter, similarly. And then I like the depth in the bullpen as well. Like, Ethan Darden has been great early on. Lucas Malstead, I know if you look at the stats and you look at what he did on Saturday, you're going to be like, Lucas Malstead. But yes, Lucas Malstead, I think, is going to be a huge guy for them. He's a sidewinding strike thrower. You can stretch him out for 2, 3, 4 if you really need him, innings at a time. He's a strike thrower. Nothing he throws is straight. I like how they've kind of deployed Matthew Markle in this utility role. Like, you can trot him out as a midweek starter. You can use him in the back end of a bullpen. He can eat innings for you in the middle. Like, that is so valuable. Rob Hughes, who's been there for a decade, he's been excellent. I came away a lot more impressed and excited about Clemson than I am down on. Like, my tune didn't really change at all on South Carolina, like, to be quite honest, leaving the weekend. Like, I still think it's a quality team. I would like to see, and will think they'll get going, but I'd like to see Cole Messina and Gavin Cassis start to swing it a little bit. Dylan Brewer has been a pleasant surprise. Ethan Petrie. Kennedy Jones has come on. Like, I still think it's a solid club. I don't know if it has the depth necessarily. It certainly hasn't gotten the production up and down the order to this point that Clemson has gotten, but I still think it's a quality regional type team. They're going to be in the mix and certainly not a gimme type series by any stretch going forward. And I think that, like, again, he couldn't start this week. It was an abbreviated weekend, so he didn't get his normal start. But Roman Kimball, I remain very impressed with. I know he made a mistake to Nolan Naraki that got punished. but I think that he is a serious guy for them going forward. And they have some nice pieces that are going to keep them competitive throughout the year.
South Carolina right now is pitching better than I feel like most or maybe anybody expected to this point. And so I view that very positively, that what was supposed to be the weakness of this team has been better than expected. So like, to me, that feels like a really good thing. I do understand, though, that they're not scoring runs at anything close to the rate that they were expected to. And anytime that happens, people start looking at like how many runners you left on base and situational hitting and wondering about things. And like, I don't have data to support that stuff is overblown, but I feel like those kinds of concerns, especially early in the season, are often overblown. And with South Carolina right now, I mean, like, they came out of that weekend hitting 264 as a team. It's just not going to be what they are. Cole Messina is not going to be sub 200. Gavin Cassis, sub 200 coming out of the weekend. Parker Nolan, sub 200 coming out of the weekend. Like, those three veterans, like, you just got to get them going. And there's plenty of track record that says they will get going, especially Cole Messina. Get them going, and I don't think you're going to have to care about situational hitting, because there are going to be a lot more home runs being hit. And I don't, like, obviously it's not simple to get those guys going, but in the same way that I'm not worried about, say, like Carter Holton and Devin Fittrell at Vanderbilt, I'm not going to sit here and worry about Gavin Cassis and Cole Messina. I think they're going to be fine, and I think that the South Carolina offense is going to be fine. And assuming that that comes to pass and its pitching staff continues at this rate, and like, I think that you're right to be encouraged by like Roman Kimball and some of the other pieces that they've run out there. South Carolina is going to be okay. Now, I guess the question is, how good is okay? Peter's talking about them as a regional caliber team, or like a regional team. And that's not going to cut it in Columbia. Like, they definitely want more and expect more. So fine has to like minimally start with being in the hosting discussion. And I think that South Carolina is fine for that. Like, I still feel good about them. I realize I've been higher on them, but I think that the offensive, there have been positive things about the offense already. And if you can just get the guys that you expected to be really good to be really good, then you're going to be in a good spot.
I will say, though, and not to, again, sound any alarms after however many games it's been for the Gamecocks, I think they've played 12 to this point. I think this weekend's a really good opportunity for those guys, Cole Messina, Gavin Cassis, and Parker Nolan, to get going. They play Longwood, who is I think for those three guys, is a nice get-right weekend before a midweek game against Georgia State, and then they go to Swayze and play Ole Miss. But, like I think they got to get going kind of quick, because they have a gauntlet of a schedule coming up when you look ahead. A couple weeks down the road, they go on consecutive weekends. They go Vanderbilt, Alabama, A&M, a midweek against North Carolina, Florida, and then Arkansas. And that takes you to the end of April. So like, what they did this weekend, like, those trends are going to have to reverse in kind of short order. They left 22 guys on between Saturday and Sunday. Like you said, like, that is not, I just don't think will continue. But again, the lineup is going to have to get a little bit more productive and productive quick, because it's not going to get out of control on South Carolina. Like, I think that they're going to notch a few, or at least a couple of really nice series wins somewhere in there, potentially a few. But it's not going to get any easier, and not going to be at all really an easy going for the Gamecocks. So again, I am most encouraged by that pitching, especially like, I don't want it to go overlooked, because what he did was outstanding. Garrett Gainey in Saturday's game, he went 3 2/3. His lone blemish was the Andrew Chufo home run, was a fastball he left up. Chufo just did a great job getting his barrel to the zone. He got a good swing off and a plus count. But 6 Ks across those 3 2/3 innings, 31 strikes across his 40 pitches. That's going to be a legit weapon for him. And again, I'm very encouraged by the pitching staff. Looking forward and intrigued to see how this offense looks against Longwood. Not really the offense as a whole. I will be honed in on Messina, Cassis, and Noland, though.
While the ACC mostly starts conference play this week, Clemson does not. And just before we get off of this series, like, the way Clemson has started this year has been quite impressive. And frankly, Eric Bakich teams have traditionally been slow starters and improve over the course of the season. Some of that is like a lot of the time he was at Michigan and cold weather, blah, blah, blah. But like also it happened last year with Clemson. To be 9-1, I think that you're going to continue to see growth out of this team. So to be 9-1, probably not have truly hit your stride yet. Like they're in a great spot. They will start ACC play in a week's time at Duke, which is obviously a tricky spot. But right now, I think Clemson can feel really good about what they've done to this point in the season. They do play Kansas State later today as we record this. So
that'll be a good game.
It could be. Kansas State got throttled last night at Tennessee. That cannot have been a fun bus ride after they lost 15-5. But if K-State is able to get back up after all of that, it could be a pretty good game.
Yeah, no, not to take a hard left turn. But yeah, I'm with you on Clemson. I think that, again, similar to last year a little bit more surprisingly so. I think this year they do have that like College World Series type upside. They certainly have the personnel to get there on both sides of the baseball. And you talk about depth, like you're going to need pitching depth to get you through that regional, super regional format where if you're playing, five regional games and three super games, like it's going to take your pitching staff. There's going to be some wear and tear on it. But I think that Clemson has the weapons to do it. And it's pretty clear at this point that the 18-1 loss against Kennesaw was just a huge, huge anomaly. Like I think that you can completely disregard that at this point. So I'm very excited to kind of see them build a little bit more momentum as they finish up their non-conference slate with UNC Greensboro before next weekend heading to Duke, which is going to be a really good series.
Let's look at the ACC as it stands this weekend. Though there are some series, it's a softish opening. Not everyone is in conference play, but the headliner is Duke and Wake Forest. You've also got Virginia and Miami, which is intriguing. Pitt at UNC, very intriguing. 8-1 Pitt, and Boston College 7-3 BC at NC State. As well as Notre Dame and Virginia Tech. Before we get to the headlining Blue Devils and Demon Deacons, I will just say this about the ACC as a whole. This is the only conference where every team right now has a winning record, which is kind of insane. There don't look like there's not going to be easy weekends. I don't know precisely how good some of these teams are. It's not like everyone's played a schedule that is going to rank in the top 40 or whatever. Like there have been some of these teams have played lesser schedules, but everyone has kind of challenged themselves in some respect. I don't like Miami took a tough series loss to Florida last weekend. I've been critical of Louisville. None of these teams look bad, which I think is going to make for some really exciting baseball all season long in this conference.
100%. And I think that while you like some of these teams might become a little bit more of a gimme than others as we get into it, but there is no like, in just looking at the standings, like you said, there is no team you can kind of point to and circle as like, okay, like this is kind of the odd duck of the bunch as to kind of that's like standing out as a bad team. Like the depth of this conference is remarkable. Florida State obviously off to an excellent start. They thrust itself into our rankings and you have the star power at the top. But I think the two teams that I've been most pleasantly surprised with to this point, Pitt for starters, like people will scoff at it. They won't kind of look too much into it, but they had a nice season opening series win against Maine, who last year made a regional. And to this point, their only blemish was a loss at Maryland. And then this weekend, I think people got a little bit more turned on to them and were like, okay, you know, Pitt's legit. And they scored 38 runs across two games in which they beat Oklahoma and Cal 19-9 and 19-7 respectively. And those are two solid teams. At least we think so early on. I would have loved for them to have gotten that game against Ohio State if they could have, you know, put another feather in their cap with a win and swept that weekend. But coming into this year, I know neither of us probably had Pitt at UNC on the ACC opening weekend as a series that we had circled. But now we do. And Coach Mike Bell has done an outstanding job. They're swinging it really well. Like Luke Cantwell has been excellent. Jaden Melendez, like him being able to produce has been excellent. CJ Funk gives them big thump. That was brutal. Ryan Zuckerman's a freshman, like who I think is going to be a guy down the road. He's a 6'4 kid. He's got 5 home runs. Jack Sokol looks the part of a solid ACC starter. Ryan Andrade has got a lot better stuff than the stats show. Like if he is on, he's really, really good and tough to hit. We kind of saw it a little bit against Washington where he allowed one earned and struck out 9 across 4 2/3. He's just got to get consistent. Like the stuff is super loud. That's not me saying that like Pitt to this point is a regional team, but I do think that like they're going to be in the mix. At least from what I've seen, they're going to be in the mix for all of this spring, or at least most of. And then BC, Coach Interdonato this year, kind of playing more or less with the house's money. Anytime there's a coaching staff turnover, the expectations are going to kind of be in check, especially where it's, you know, Boston College, where it's not like a perennial like power in the ACC you're talking about. But he's done a great job, off to a 7-3 start, a few really nice wins over Ohio State. Cal had a solid midweek win last night over UNCW. Like, I have no doubt in my mind that Coach Interdonato is going to build them into a consistent winner. Now, is he ahead of schedule? I don't really know. The personnel they have screams more like scrappy than star power this season, but I'm very curious to see what he does, like once he's able to recruit his guys and use the resources that BC has. So those are two teams that I've been particularly impressed with. Georgia Tech on the pitching side, outside of the bona fide star that is Drew Burris, on the pitching side, I've been pleasantly surprised with them. And then Virginia Tech is kind of lurking and hanging out as another team that could pop. So you can kind of go through this exercise with every team in the conference, some more than others, and kind of point to why they will be competitive for the entire spring. And I think that's what's going to make it a ton of fun.
I am very intrigued by Pitt this weekend. You know, you mentioned the offensive explosion last weekend. It's notable that that was at altitude in Vegas. And I don't really say that to take anything away from what they did offensively. I more say that to say that, like, I don't know anything about their pitching staff. Like, Jack Sokol on Fridays seems pretty good. What they're going to have behind that, I'm less sure about. And that's why that's what I'm watching this weekend at UNC, because last weekend was not the environment to evaluate pitching. Mike Bell's background is in pitching. I think that they can probably be pretty solid on the mound, but they need people to step up behind Sokol. And if that happens, I think the expectations or the ceiling of where Pitt can be this year kind of changes. So that's what I'm watching this weekend against UNC. And then you mentioned Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech is under the radar right now, but Brett Renfro has been as good as like any freshman in the country, at least on the mound. He instantly became their number one. He's given up 3 runs in 16 innings. He has 19 strikeouts. Like, they've played decent enough competition. Like, it started at Charlotte. That was really good. Rhode Island, fine, whatever. Stony Brook, pretty good. And he threw six scoreless against Stony Brook. So I'm intrigued by Virginia Tech. I don't super know what to expect. This weekend, Notre Dame comes in. Notre Dame's 9-2. It's a really soft 9-2. I don't know what to expect from them. So I think this weekend in Blacksburg, very intriguing series. But we've spent a lot of time teasing the idea that we would talk about Duke and Wake Forest. And now we will get to Duke and Wake Forest. This is a top 15 matchup. Duke was undefeated up until they lost a weird game on Saturday to Akron. But that's the only loss so far this season. They beat App State 28-2 on Tuesday for some reason. They have Jonathan Santucci at the front of the rotation. And if you ask Peter, he might tell you that Jonathan Santucci is like the number one pitcher in the draft class. On a different day, Peter would have a different answer. I've heard different things from Peter. But like that's what they've got going for them is Jonathan Santucci is a legit dude, and their offense, and we've talked about it on this podcast before, like they are swinging it at a level that we did not expect, and the bullpen is really strong as well. And then Wake is Wake, but Wake also hasn't been Wake yet, and that's what makes this weekend so interesting, is that after three kind of, like, has Wake played with their food because Wake is uninterested? And, you know, they've played kind of nothing to this point, you know, like, is that why they haven't looked great? Or is there something deeper there? And this weekend is a great way to find that out, because they will not just be able to sit around and say like, it's Duke. Like, it's not 2005 anymore. Like, this is a real, real test for Wake Forest with Duke coming to town.
Yeah, we've had this one circled for a long, long time, and even more so recently, given how both of these teams have looked and kind of on opposite, not opposite ends of the spectrum, but for a lot different reasons. Duke has come out and looked a lot better, especially offensively, than I think either of us anticipated. They're 11-1 right now with just a weird loss to Akron on Saturday. They bounced back and kind of took care of business on Sunday before, like you said, for whatever reason, it got to 28-2 yesterday. Like, we could go on and on about midweek games and the concept of those. They, like, Santucci and Hartle on Friday night is going to be as good of a pitching matchup as you can find. Obviously, this weekend, it's the best pitching matchup, but in looking through the entire schedule this year, it is up there for one of the best.
You take this, or would you take Holman versus Hagen Smith? Because that's the only other one that comes to mind.
That's a very good question. It's kind of pick your poison there. You could say either of those two, and I'd be like, yeah, that's fair. So I'd say it's, again, not to be like middleman Peter here, but it's a tie. I think I might lean slightly towards Holman and Hagen Smith, in given the environment in which that either would pitch in. Like, I think that's all the more reason to be up for a game like that. But again, you've got two of the best lefties in this year's draft, not named Hagen Smith. Santucci, for me personally, at this moment of recording, is SP2 on Peter's personal big board, TM. But again, With Wake, there's no doubt that the rotation is going to be able to, like, they will pitch well. Hartle, Burns, and Massey, they will give you, between the three of them, 18 to 20, 21 or so innings of really well-pitched baseball. But I'm not concerned, but rather intrigued as to where those last, like, nine or so innings are going to come from and who's going to get those outs. Because we saw yesterday on Tuesday against Georgetown, them struggle a little bit. The start, Hayden LaFeu actually got hit around a little bit. But Binghamton, the bullpen, struggled a little bit. Like, they haven't had that weekend since we talked about it, even after opening weekend when it wasn't like a crazy loud showing. They haven't had that weekend where you're kind of sitting there being and saying, okay, you know, this is the week that we expected. It just took them however long to get going. And I'm also curious to see how that offense looks, because we've been talking about it again for a while now. who's going to step up around Nick Kurtz and Siver King? And it's, and neither of them have gotten going to this
point. Now it's, are they going to step up to, right, to support, to support Jack Winnay and Adam Tellier?
Yeah, it's almost, it is almost reverse at this point. Like, it's easy to say because of their prospect status, but those, like, had those guys or have those guys not stepped up, you could be looking at a drastically different record right now for Wake. So, like, I'm, it's such a curious series for me for, like, how for real Wake is, because you haven't been able to ding them right now from that number one ranking. They haven't, they're 11-1. Like, that's very impressive no matter who you're playing, even though it is a little light. But, like, I need some reassurance from the Deeks this weekend that, you know, they are kind of that number one team and top dog. And if they can go out and, like you said, prove that over the last few weeks they've just kind of been sleepwalking and looking ahead to this series in the start of conference play, you know, that'll speak volumes. But I think that this is a Duke team, kind of switching tune here. This is a Duke team that not only can win a game this series, I think that they can absolutely win the series outright, especially with Santucci on Friday, and then you throw Andrew Healy into the mix. The bullpen, for the most part, has been very solid. I think that James Talon struggling to this point was unforeseen. He looked good yesterday against App State, albeit it was App State. But it was a confidence builder. And then the lineup has been, I mean, they've been swinging it at an unbelievable clip. They're hitting almost 360 as a team with 35 bombs. They give you no breaks there. Anyone 1 through 9 can kind of beat you with one swing. So if I had to pick a series winner, I think it's coming down to a third game. I lean slightly Wake, but man, it would not surprise me at all if Duke is able to come away with a series win, because it is a really, really darn good club. And I'm really curious to see how the Wake offense kind of holds up against them, and also how the pitching staff outside of those starters kind of navigates it.
Weirdly, I kind of think that it being in Winston-Salem helps Duke. Like, is that the craziest thing that I could say right now? Like, Duke this season playing at Jack Coombs, you know, they're really good there. That's also very much a pitcher's park. I just feel like with the way Duke is swinging the bats, I mean, like, they just scored 28 runs at home last week or yesterday, so, you know, whatever, but their offense clearly is not struggling there. But they're going to be playing this in the more offensive park, and right now Duke's offense looks better than Wake's offense, so, like, I don't know, like, that feels like a better situation for them. That, you know, if Wake could get the help that from, like, the wind whipping in from the outfield at Jack Coombs the way it does sometimes, like, maybe that would be more of a help. I don't know. Like, it feels weird that we're sitting here saying, like, Wake needs help, and, like, Wake is in this, like, tight spot at home. They're 11-1. They haven't really done anything wrong all season. Like, yeah, don't lose to UNC Greensboro, but, you know, don't lose. Every team in the country has one of those right now, except for, like, TCU, basically. They're 5 undefeated teams. All this does tell you, like, the way Peter and I are talking about this right now should let you know that we don't feel super confident in Wake Forest right now, and I am just waiting for them to have that breakout weekend. I am waiting for them to say, like, yes, we are as good as you thought we were. Like, yes, we just haven't cared. We haven't been interested by playing Fordham and by playing Binghamton. Put Duke across from us, put this, like, in the conference standings, and, like, we're gonna care this weekend. That's what I'm looking for. If that doesn't happen, then I think we have to start wondering about what it's gonna take to jumpstart Wake, and especially Kurtz and King. Like, is there too much pressure on them, and what does that mean? But right now, I'm willing to just say, like, maybe they're just not that into it. And as long as they get into it this weekend, like, that's totally fine. You know, it's not easy to get up for some of the stuff that they've had so far when you are expected to be playing into June. And, you know, it's not like it's a load management, but like it's a long season. You got to pace yourself. And if they've just been pacing themselves, like I'm fine with that.
Right. And given how they looked last year, and I know that they lost a lot of key pieces from last year, I'm willing to give them that benefit of the doubt. And if they go out, win a series this weekend, even if they somehow sweep it, I won't be like totally reassured about Wake, like, but I will have, I'm sure that a lot of my doubts will be very much quelled, and I'll be like, okay, you know, they're just kind of playing with their food a little bit, so to speak. But if Duke goes into Winston-Salem and wins this series, one, it's a huge statement win by Duke, and you immediately kind of have to start talking about them in an upper echelon of teams in college baseball if you haven't been doing so already. But then, like you said, you really do start to wonder about Wake because they play UVA next weekend. Like, at that point, you'll be a month into the season. Like, Nick Kurtz and Seaver King, if they still aren't really producing, what do you have in those? Like, it's clear in watching that they are kind of pressing a little bit, like, at the plate. Kurtz has come on a little bit as a late. He hit a titanic blast, I think, against Elon. He went 2-for-4 yesterday. But like, I think that it is evident that they were, at least especially early on, and still kind of are, pressing a little bit. And then that offense be like, it's not thin around them because it's been great to see guys like Adam Tellier, Jack Winne, Tate Ballestero step up. Merrick Houston has kind of seen an uptick in production since last year, but like that offense becomes a little bit less scary, I think. You know, if we're sitting here next, if this time next week with a series loss. And again, to reiterate it a little bit, one, I'm curious to see how Kurtz and King look, especially, and then also like the bullpen as a whole and who's going to give you those quality innings and where those outs are going to come from, because they have arm talent. It's just been wildly inconsistent. So Wake has a big test this weekend and has a chance to answer a lot of questions. And then on the flip side, like Duke, unless they kind of get their drum beat a little bit, I'm not going to come out of this weekend feeling totally different about them, even if they lose this series or get swept, which I don't think they'll get swept. But I think just a huge, huge test early on for Wake.
Let's close this out by talking a little Pac-12 baseball. They also start conference play this week, and they don't have a marquee series, in part because Oregon State is the one team that's left out of starting conference play this week. Their bye is this week. But the other reason, Peter, is that the Pac-12 behind Oregon State is a jumbled mess right now, and trying to pick who is actually good and who is going to push Oregon State is a real challenge. You've got Oregon, which probably is the right answer. Like if we're looking for like who is the second best team in the Pac-12, like that answer is probably the Ducks. They are 8-3. They also have a fielding issue though. Like they're fielding like 957 right now or something, and you know, like fielding percentage, whatever, but like that's potentially problematic. Cal also is 8-3 and just beat Stanford in a midweek, but you know, we were expecting them to go to Vegas and have a nice weekend and you know, push us to put them in the top 25, and that just did not happen. Utah is 9-3. Sorry, Utah, I'm not taking you seriously yet at 9-3. And Washington State 7-4. They've got some good, some bad, and everyone else is 500 or worse. Like Arizona, Arizona State, Stanford, UCLA, Washington, USC, all the teams that were pretty good last year, 500 or worse right now. And, you know, varying degrees of difficulty to the schedule, but, you know, it just, it's not great. Oregon is at Arizona State this weekend. That's the biggest series that I could find. You could also get excited for Cal and UCLA, I suppose. I'm interested to see Oregon go on the road to Arizona State. Arizona State always plays better at home. They're coming off of a really bad weekend in Arlington. They got beat by A&M and TCU pretty good. And now they have to face Oregon in, it's not must win, but anytime Arizona State is at home, I kind of feel like it's almost must win, until they prove that they can win away from away from home. Like, they just have to make hay at home. So it feels like a pretty big start to Pac-12 play for both the Ducks and the Sun Devils.
Yeah, and just looking at the conference as a whole, it's so like weird and murky right now, because I'm with you in kind of in looking and sifting through this pile of teams after Oregon State. I've kind of come out of it with Oregon, Cal, and honestly Arizona as the three kind of next best teams in the conference, at least right now. Oregon's Oregon. They're sitting at 8-3. They have nice pieces both offensively with Jeffrey Hurd and Drew Smith. Carter Garate has been swinging it. Like, they have nice pieces on both sides of the baseball. Cal, they have the two blue chip prospects in Caleb Lomavita and Rodney Green Jr. They will be getting a huge boost on the mound soon with Ian May coming back from Tommy John surgery, who last year, I don't have it in front of me, but I think he was off. He had started the season with 16 or so scoreless innings in a row. He's a nice pitchability lefty that's going to get like, that's going to bring a huge relief to the rest of the staff and take a little bit of a load off. And then Arizona, like, I don't know exactly how good they're going to be as we get into the meat of conference play and with all these teams beating up on each other, but they're not going to be an easy series win for anyone going forward. And I think Oregon State included in that. They went 1-2 in Frisco this weekend, but they lost a pair of one-run games to a really good Dallas Baptist team and I think a really, really good Alabama team before beating up on Indiana 12-1, which I don't know if the Hoosiers right now are quite, well, they're literally not, but I don't know if they're like the top 25 team that we had thought they were early on and as recently as last week, but that's still a very impressive win. And they've got a quartet of guys offensively in Garen Caulfield, Brendan Summerhill, Mason White, who's my personal favorite on that offense, and Richie Morales, who can really swing it. I just don't know the stamina of the pitching staff and kind of the depth that has. Jackson Kent and Clark Candiotti have been really solid for the most part in each of their three starts. But after that, I'm kind of curious to see how it shakes out, especially depth-wise in the bullpen, because I think that's where it can get a little bit shaky. But for me, those are the three teams that I have circled. USC, I think, I'm sure this is where you're going to go after my kind of who's the second best in the Pac-12 tangent. But
part of me was considering ignoring USC, but you're there and I'm ready, so go.
Like, man, or have they been a disappointment this year? And I hate to say that and not to like you can't really mince words. Like, we had come into this year super excited about them. Like, had them circled as a team that was going to break its tournament drought. They had won 34 games last year under first-year head coach Andy Stankiewicz with 17 Pac-12 wins. They were turning a ton, and they have just been, I mean, to say they've come out flat would almost be being kind, because they have looked really, really brutal at times. Like, they had a great chance this weekend to start it off with a win over TCU on Friday that they squandered. And then they lose to A&M and TCU. Like, they had a nice midweek win over Fullerton, but right now, like, hitting wise, they're hitting 216 as a team. Like, granted, they're not going to end up at 216 as a team for the rest of the season, but goodness, like, you can't win games hitting like that at any point in the year. Jacob Galloway has hit well. Other than that, nobody has hit well. No one has hit well outside of guys with a very minimal sample size. And then pitching-wise, Caden Aoki has been solid, and honestly, some bullpen guys have actually been really good. And what I've seen, like, Brock Blatter has looked good, Xavier Martinez has looked good, Michael Ebner at times has looked good. But, like, you can't win games if you don't score runs, and, like, they're just not scoring runs.
They've scored 50 runs in 12 games. That's 261st nationally. And, like, it's actually they rank worse than that in batting average. I mean, it's been brutal offensively. And, you know, last year you can certainly make an argument that they got snubbed and that, you know, it would have been nice to be able to build off some momentum of an NCAA tournament appearance, but like they also had an opportunity to use that as a lot of motivation and come into this season playing their best baseball or ready to go or whatever, and they just have fallen on their face. And honestly, it is time to panic if you're a USC fan. Like, the time to panic is now. And I almost never say that this early in the season, but here's where it goes from here. You have Arizona coming in this weekend, and you just heard what Peter had to say about Arizona. Like, it's a 5-6, but solid Arizona team. And also, Arizona's going to come score some runs. And so if you're a team that struggles to score runs, like, now you have to keep pace with the Wildcats this weekend. And that's something you have really struggled to do so far this year. Then they go on the road to Stanford and UCLA. And look, the Cardinal and Bruins are going through it themselves. They're both 500 or 500-ish. I guess UCLA lost last night to fall to 5-6. It's not like those are going in and, you know, playing what Stanford and UCLA can be at their best. However, USC is 9-24-1 away from home since the start of last season. So, like, it really doesn't matter who they're playing away from home. Like, they have struggles with that. So those are tough. And then you come home and it's Oregon State. And that is their month of March. And I mean, honestly, their season could be over by April 1st if they don't turn this around in a hurry. Like, it truly could be over that quick. Like, I don't know what the fix is. They just got to find some ways to score some runs, because it's not like the pitching staff has been that bad. Like, it, this really is an offensive issue, and it's one that has to get corrected in a real hurry, especially with one of the Pac-12's better offenses coming to town this weekend.
Yeah, the pitching staff, like I said and you said, it's looked respectable, but this weekend is, I mean, it's a must-win series for them, I think. And it's going to be really tough to do so because, like you said, like, I just don't think that this offense, at least at this point in time, is going to be able to score nearly enough to keep up with Arizona. And then in looking at their schedule, like you said, it's got a chance to really, really get out of control fast. So I think that, again, like, you got to somehow find a way to win two games this weekend, or else, you know, it's going to really kind of snowball on you.
Before we get out of here, Stanford and UCLA, I just said what I, you know, that they're both about 500. Stanford had won five straight before losing on Tuesday to Cal. UCLA started the season well. We ranked them, have not played well since. Those were the two teams that coming into the year were expected to challenge Oregon State. And that's not just us saying that. If you look at the Pac-12 coaches poll, Stanford and UCLA were picked second and third. Peter, obviously I'm not ready to panic about either the Cardinal or the Bruins. I guess, are you though? And assuming that you're not, like, how do they get out of the mess that they have made to start the season?
Stanford, yes, I'm absolutely worried about. UCLA, no. Stanford has a little bit of a case of the USC's where they're not, like, they're just not hitting. They're hitting .257 as a team. Jimmy Nati is kind of the only legit producer on that roster, but outside of him, like, they really can't, they're just not driving the ball. Like, it's a bunch of, like, it's just a bunch of singles. Like, they've hit,
which is crazy considering where Stanford has been the last couple of years. Like, where, like, Andrew Doshback and, like, those guys, like, going back like 5 years, they have been, like, up until like last year with Bowser and Troy and stuff, like, it's been like bruisers. And outside of Malcolm Moore, I don't even know who it's supposed to be this year.
Right, they've had these huge sluggers. Like, even last year's roster, they had, like, more than half their lineup could drive the ball out of the yard. But like you said, Malcolm Moore is really it right now. Like, Owen Cobb has three home runs, but no one thinks of Owen Cobb. Like, he's a nice player, but no one thinks of Owen Cobb as, like, this big middle-of-the-order bat who can kind of drive the baseball with authority. And Malcolm Moore has gotten off to a really slow start. Everyone on this offense outside of Jimmy Nati has gotten off to a slow start. And I think that it's a major concern. The offense is the biggest concern. They haven't really pitched it all that well either, but I do think that they have
the, I like the rotation.
Yeah, I think that they have what is going to be a really, really good rotation. Matt Scott didn't get off to a great start with his first couple of outings, but he looked really good against Rice. He had 12 strikeouts. Christian Lim, I think, is the next great Stanford arm to kind of emerge out of the farm. He went 6 shutout against Rice with 10 Ks, strike throwing lefty with good stuff. Nick Dugan is a strike throwing right-hander who has taken a little bit of a step forward since last year. I think you can feel really excited about those three guys. And I know that the bullpen is a little young with guys like Joey Volchko and Aiden Keenan, but they do have some night. Like, I'm not very worried about the pitching staff. I think once it comes into form, it's actually going to be one of the better ones potentially in the Pac-12 outside of Oregon State. But I am kind of in the USC boat where I just don't know, and honestly don't think that the team at this point is going to be able to score enough runs to win a lot of these series, which is difficult to say, but I'm just trying to a handful of guys are going to really, really need to step up. So I'm definitely worried about Stanford, a little bit less so about UCLA, but again, though, like, UCLA is a team, like, they're not necessarily lighting the world on fire at the plate either. Cody Schreier, it's been nice to see him bounce back from an injury riddled 23. Deuce Gorson's done really well. I think Rock Chalowski, all things considered, as a true freshman being thrust into a starting role, has played well. But again, you're kind of looking at, like, I think both of these teams has a run scoring problem and is just very thin offensively, because again, I do like UCLA's pitching staff. A rotation of Luke Jewett, Michael Bennett, and Finn McElroy, I think, is really good. And they also have a lot of, at least a handful of bullpen guys that you can be excited about and feel confident about giving you 1 to 2 really quality innings at a time. But I just don't know where the runs are going to come from for either of these teams. And I think that's what's ultimately going to do them in.
One of the reasons why I'm not panicking about either of these teams is, I guess, the schedule. It's for Stanford. They get they have to go to Washington this weekend. Washington 3-5-1 to this point. It's not the Washington of last year. Then they have USC at home. Then they're non-conference for a weekend with Creighton. Then they're at Utah. Then Washington State at home. And then they have to play the teams that we think are the best in the Pac-12. It's very backloaded. So Stanford gets what looks like the first half of Pac-12 play to figure some things out. And maybe that allows them to build some momentum, find some things out. On the other hand, if they continue to play poorly, like, it is really going to make things very difficult for them to resolve in the second half of the season. UCLA, it's not quite as easy. Like, they're at Cal this weekend, and that's tricky. But then they're home against Washington State and USC for a couple weeks before ending the month at Arizona. So if they can find a way this weekend to look okay and then come home and play well against Wazoo and USC, which, you know, I mean, it's not the easiest thing to do, but the schedule sets up pretty well for Stanford and okay for UCLA to find some balance here and find a little bit of those offensive pieces that they've missed so far. But they both got to do it quick, because things do get harder from there. And, you know, this weekend, I don't know that Cal UCLA, I mean, I know it doesn't have the same acrimony that Texas Tech does, but that was a uncomfortable divorce as UCLA left the Pac-12 for the Big Ten. This is probably going to be, I'm more hopeful that, like, these programs could figure a way to keep playing if they want to than I am about Texas and Texas Tech, but this also might be the last one of these for a while. And I mean, I'm sure Cal's going to be aware of that and be up for that on a different level than Texas Tech. But yeah, the fact that this is all happening on the same weekend did not escape my attention.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. And I think that long-term, I'm most optimistic about UCLA. I think that even if they do lose this weekend series against Berkeley, it won't totally change my thinking on them unless they look really bad. And they could also go out and look really good and win a series and kind of reassure me a little bit. But with Stanford, like, they got 6 hit and shut out by Cal in a midweek last night. Again, Cal is good, but midweek
that games was that was a brutal one.
Like, midweek games are typically where you get these really weird run totals, and they're more offensive than they are weekend games. But like, they got completely skunked by Berkeley, and they were.
And that, like, no, I thought that Stanford had started to find itself. Like, I don't know how good Rice is, because Rice has played some really difficult opponents at this point. But, like, they went out, they got a sweep, they were on a 5-game winning streak, and then bam, like, Cal was like, no, like, zero.
And there were only a few innings last night in which they were really even threatening. It wasn't like there was much traffic on the base paths, and they just couldn't kind of come through with that one big hit. I guess in a couple innings you could say that, but, I mean, it was just really, really quiet. And I think for a lot of reasons, given the standard of Stanford baseball, especially recently, this weekend you kind of have to, like, this is a must-win series for me. Like, Washington, like you said, it's not last year's Washington team that was a sleeper team going into the tournament as someone who could make noise. Like, they lost a lot. It's a very different-looking team. I think they have to go out and win this weekend series, and, like, there is no reason... Well, there is a reason, but I think for me, they have to go out and win at least 2 of these next 3. Like, they have a very, very favorable schedule, like you said.
Yeah, they got to win all of these. I'm not going to feel confident if they don't win any of the, like, because, like, even the road series, it's like at Utah and at UW. Like, I mean, it'll be tricky this weekend, but it's not like they're going, like, it's not like you're at Arizona, where, like, Arizona plays so well at home. You know, you're not going to Goss, you're not going to Eugene. Like, the road trips are manageable in this first half of the Pac-12 season for Stanford.
100%. And I think, like you said, they very well could go out and win all 4 of these games, or all 4 of these series, rather. But I also wouldn't be totally surprised if Stanford's leaving Washington with another series loss and they score like 12 to 14 runs on the weekend. Like, it's been that bad recently. So they kind of have to get going quick. And a lot of these guys are going to need to step up for me to not be as worried about the Cardinal.
All right, so we went pretty deep on all this stuff. I will say there, it's not the greatest weekend to come in terms of like series to watch. It's really the headliners and then other things. Like, there's a clear delineation, I guess, is what I'm trying to say poorly. What else you're going to watch this weekend, though? What else you're going to want to watch this weekend? Southern Miss is at Louisiana Tech. Louisiana Tech, as we record this, they still have to play on Wednesday night, but they are currently one of the remaining undefeated teams. And Southern Miss coming off of a nice series win last weekend against Indiana State. And this is a rivalry. These teams do not care for each other, these fan bases anyway. The coaching staffs actually have a fair amount of interconnection. But this is an old Conference USA rivalry, and I'm really happy to see it continue. Even with Southern Miss moving to the Sun Belt, I'll have more about La Tech on the website maybe by the time this is in your ears. Troy is at Indiana. Interesting series. Maryland at Charlotte. UConn at Santa Barbara. Sam Houston State at Texas State. And Long Beach State at Wichita State. So big weekend in the Sun Belt is what I'm saying here. I listed like 4 Sun Belt series here. So that is like, you know, those last few non-conference series for the Sun Belt look like they could be pretty intriguing.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a fun weekend all around. And then a couple others that I'll have my eye on: Xavier at LSU. And then UC Irvine has 2 games with Fresno State, with a matchup against Columbia sandwiched in between. So not like the loudest weekend per se, but a lot of intrigue around the country.
We call that the Justin Lower Bowl in
exactly.
All right, so plenty to pay attention to, even on a weekend that we're not maybe as excited about as we were the slate a weekend ago. And but we got conference games, and that's quite exciting on its own. So make sure you are following along on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Peter is at Peter G. Flaherty. There'll be plenty of stuff to read over on the website. That's baseballamerica.com. And we will see you here next week with another edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. Until then, have a great one.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.